I buy whiskey November from we by the way to fly. She was in love with a pilot and he was in love with a scar. And they played the moonlight serenade of the Cape York Peninsula. And down the coast of the Daintree, Queensland, Australia.
John Williamson, Papa Whiskey November. A song inspired by an aeroplane and a pioneering airline, Bush Pilots Airways. Now remembered as Bushies. It began flying the far north Queensland skies in 1951. And this is part two of the Bushies story, originally heard on ABC Radio, Far North Queensland. At first, Bushies connected remote properties and communities and provided aerial ambulance services. It went on to pioneer business and tourism in far north Queensland and across northern Australia. Everyone who worked there said it was more like a family than a business. Let's meet some of the Bushies family.
The company covered the whole of the peninsula. That included the cattle stations and all the Aboriginal communities. Not only that, their routes covered the whole of the coastal strip all the way down to Brisbane, west of Brisbane, Mount Isa. They covered that area too. So really and truly, it was quite a large company.
Everywhere in far north Queensland to Thursday Island, all the stations right over to Mount Isa, Mornington, even as far as Broome on tours.
Well, Mornington Island's always been one of my favourites, and the people there are just wonderful and warm and welcoming. I used to love Ted River, or Edward River, now called Pomperau. Groot, of course, up in the Torres Strait, now there's a story. Cooktown was good, Weipa was fun. I loved them all. I really can't say I've got a favourite, because they were all favourites.
I think I worked on just about every major airport in the tip of Cape York. You know, like if you went to Cowan, the town was 14 kilometres away from the strip, so the only contact you had was the groundsman and his wife. And those people being fairly isolated, and some of the stations you go to are fairly isolated, they would be so pleased to have someone different to talk to. And they would go out of their way to help you, run around after you. The lady would make... turn up with scones and bickies for smoko and the cups of tea, and meals would be a fairly grandiose affair, whereas normally they wouldn't be. But there was suddenly a visitor on the strip that was an out-of-towner, and all they'd want to do is sit down and talk. It hit home just what sort of service Bush Pilots was giving to the public.
On the DC-3s, we went up to New Guinea, all around Cape York, all the Aboriginal missions, all the way through to Mount Isa. Did quite a lot of trips from Thursday Island over to Broome for pearl diver sort of recreational leave. We used to pick them up from Broome, bring them back to TI, leave them there for 3 weeks and then return them and pick up another load. Did a few trips up to Timor for Woodside Burma. Oh, it was a pretty versatile aeroplane, had low-pressure tyres. We used to land on sand, Arakoon, for example. Dilly, from memory... we had to chase deer and water buffalo off the strip before we could land on it. They were very versatile. Trouble is, these used to leak a fair bit, and you'd come through the hatch on the roof or through the windows, and you'd get quite wet if it was raining.
I can actually remember the first day they pushed a DC-3 in. It was VHAQ, which was owned by Foyster up at Lakeland Downs, and I remember the ops people who were used to filling eight-place aeroplanes scratching their heads and screaming and much gnashing of teeth, where they said, oh, we'll never fill it, 28 seats, it's just too big, we'll never fill it. From an engineering point of view, we had a few World War II experienced engineers who looked on a DC-3 very favourably, and from their point of view, it was a step up from Cessnas and small stuff. You know, within a couple of years, we went from 1 to 5, so they certainly managed to fill them.
Oh, they were just a joy to fly in. Even though when you're on the ground, you're walking uphill and downhill all the time because of being a tail dragger, but they were hot because you never went over 10,000 feet, so there was no air conditioning as such. But you always felt comfortable in them. Before, I'd flown with Ansett on jets and Fokker Friendships, which I loathed. was being on the DC-3, it was the old girl that flew so beautifully. It was lovely.
Yeah, sometimes it was a little bit bumpy, but you had to keep your mind on looking after everybody because it was so easy just to gaze out the window and admire the scenery, and flying over the reef is the best way to see it from the air. And over the rainforest and the bird life in Cape York. My gosh, that was something to see.
A mail run in the 402, it would leave Cairns over 2 days and head up into the peninsula and 25 different stations over the 2 days. You loaded and unloaded it yourself, you ticketed everybody, and you had to fly it. And there was visual flying between the stations. The weather, of course, was a challenge, as it still is. And then you'd be back to Cairns at night time, IFR, instrument flight rules, instrument letdowns, and the rain and thunderstorms and so forth. So it was very new, this instrument flying up there. We were basically the vanguards of that.
And the people that came on board were inventive and creative, and we created, for example, those Papua New Guinea tours, and they went very, very successfully until PNG became independent, and then everyone needed visas and passports. Our studies found that most of our passengers came out of caravan parks, and no one coming in a caravan to Cairns brought their visa and passport with them, so that was the death knell to the PNG tours. But beyond that, we also had the tours going to the Aboriginal communities and further afield. And some of our flight attendants were expert tour guides. I mean, they doubled it up and doubled up their job. And they were very, very good.
Oh, it was a lot of fun. It was challenging. The spirit of the company and the entrepreneurial side of the company was what made it in the tourism side. For example, Lizard Island was developed by Bushies. And then we do the day tours to Cooktown. And the cash flow that went into that community. We'd take groups of golfers from here to play golf against Groot Island or against the Weipa people. We'd take bowling clubs, you know. It was creating opportunities for people to see the north that they would never have seen. We would have take people, for example, on the mail run so they'd see what life was like on the cattle stations, you know.
Down the coast to the Daintree, Queensland, Australia. Yes, sir!
As time went on, our service was less needed, I think. The board decided to call it a day and put the company up for sale. TAA bought it, and I don't think knew what to do with it too much, and operated for about 3 years and then folded it.
It was just a shame that it was taken over and just died. It was very sad. And there was a lot of tears shed too.
Mm. It was a family feeling, there's no doubt about that. Everyone was flexible. Like, I can remember many tours that I used to go on as a tour leader, and I'd have the captain of the aeroplane taking his shirt off and unloading the aircraft with me. The hostesses were all flexible. They would do things above and beyond the call of duty, the pilots would. And then it flowed down to all of us, you know. You just had to get in there and do things and load or unload or help with the refueling or push things around or push barrows full of bags. And that was the way it was. Today, you know, it's totally different.
I think bush pilots or bushies had a name in those days. It seemed to be people thought aviation was a bit of a glamour industry. A lot of people still think it is a glamour industry.
Bushies was definitely never glamorous. I was an ex-ANSET hostie before that. That was a little bit more glamorous, but bushies, no. But great fun.
People either became part of the family and stopped, or if they didn't like it, they left. And it was the way it worked. Engineers would arrive and never seemed to leave. You know, they were always happy. Yeah, and guys that were there were always there for a long time.
Bushies had a very close-knit community. When I went there was only about 8 pilots and 5 or 6 aeroplanes. We all knew each other, and, you know, if someone wanted a day off particularly, well, you'd just swap your rosters around, and very close-knit. And that seemed to stay with them even when they expanded. In the 2 years I was there, we expanded phenomenally, and that kept on going. That camaraderie, not only amongst the pilots, but the cabin crew and the engineers.
Definitely part of a family. We all still keep in touch. We just all clicked and all got on and all wanted to keep the company going and flapping through the skies. And we were all just terribly involved and involved with the people out in the bush and on the communities. Yeah, I mean, we're just a huge family with the agents we had in Normanton and places like that. I remember them very fondly, very fondly.
There was no standing on ceremony. I mean, you get a lot of elitism in companies. Ours never had that. And I think that's what probably made us the family that we were. And there are a lot of people working for different companies today that have good feelings for the times that they spent with us, even though it was so long ago.
Well, in the wet season, there were no roads. You know, we were the lifeline. You know, the old days of Cooktown, when there was only 250 people resident in Cooktown, when the barge stopped, Bushies was the only way in the wet season. So we'd go up with one load side of the DC3 loaded up with bread and food, and passengers on the other side, and we used to help unload.
It will always have its place in history because of what it achieved, the entrepreneurial spirit of its leaders, the way it saw things such as, you take Lizard Island Lodge, you know, that was a dream that came from people flying over the top of that island and seeing a bit of real estate that had an aerodrome. And from that, there's now a world-class five-star resort that is there now. It was special. It was special days.
If we hadn't have done it, I suppose someone else would have. I think it was just a bit of a junction of can-do people, Bob Norman, Sir Sid, Ron and Ern and so forth, just all coming together at the same time and the need growing with the rural industry picking up at that stage and the mining industry and the tourist industry all starting off at the same sort of time. I think the money started to flow and aeroplanes became something that you could actually use reasonably economically. I just had a wonderful time. I grew up as far as flying experience concerned, and it stood me in tremendous stead over the years.
That spirit that existed within the organisation, I can remember going back to the days when you didn't get prior warnings about cyclones. We had a fleet of something like 30-odd aircraft based here at the airport, so a cyclone, you'd get probably an hour or two's warning, and the people would, our staff, would just converge on the airport to organise to get these aircraft flown to other safer destinations, safer airports. And they would do that at the expense of their own family. You know, my wife and children were at home by themselves, putting their toys out of the backyard, tidying up the trees and so forth in preparation, while, you know, myself and my colleagues were out here organising refuelers to refuel aircraft, getting crew out to fly the aircraft and so forth.
We've heard the voices of the late Sir Robert Norman and his son, Bob. Ron Inch, Louise Vickers, Col White, Brian Williams, Wendy Walsh, Colin Shedden, Bob McKinnon, Warwick Tainton, Lionel Dyer. Thanks to the Cairns Historical Society and ABC Radio Longreach. Thanks to John Williamson for letting us play Papa Whiskey November. Copyright 1991, eMusic, Proprietary Limited. I'm Richard Dinnan. Thank you for listening.